number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg down, smack on jackal.
Next time is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now.
This is what we do. From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
The National Championship College Football game coming up on Monday carries a huge significance to the perception of where college football is. The Alabama Crimson Tide are going for their fourth national title in 7 years. There is a pressure there that Nick Saban may not feel, the players may not feel, but yet does exist. It does exist in the fans of the SEC. Alabama carries with them into this game not only the pride of their state and their university, but the pride of the entire region of the country that has believed in the superiority of a particular brand of football that's being played in the college ranks. And it is unlike pride anywhere else in the country because it is based on arrogant success and it is based on real huge exaggerated statements on the effectiveness of other conferences. Here's what I mean. You can have total Big Ten pride. You can have total Pac-12 pride, Big 12 pride, all of that. You totally can. But I never have heard anybody in the Pac-12 or the Big Ten or the Big 12 say anything remotely as arrogant as diehard SEC fan has said about the conference. Now, for the most part, when you win as many national championships as the SEC has, there are bragging rights. To the victor go the spoils. You win, you do get to brag. But the arrogance of where football is and where it resides and how other conferences, man, they might not even be playing the same sport, was really prevalent during the strong SEC run. But what have we had over the last couple of years? Well, we saw Florida State defeat Auburn in the national championship game. We saw Alabama get beaten by Ohio State. After taking a comfortable lead in that game, the Buckeyes didn't fold, didn't collapse, weren't devastated by the weight of the moment and the mountain that they were going to have to climb in beating Alabama. They just went out and beat Alabama. Now, this year, the Tide are playing a Clemson team where Dabo Sweeney is going around saying how nobody respects them. But I will tell you this, Dabo. You're going to have a lot of people on that night rooting for you. A lot of people around the country love nothing more than to see the monster that is the SEC take another stab to the belly. And if you do end up beating Alabama, you're going to have fans around the country. It was that bad for a lot of people. Now, does Nick Saban feel this kind of pressure? Probably not. Do the players feel this kind of pressure to win one for the SEC? No. So but it's real. It's there. It's going to reside in the fan base. It's going to reside in the administration. It's going to reside pretty much in every media entity that ever touted the conference as being the best and better than all the rest. Now, one game or a dip in national championships doesn't mean the SEC is toast or it's done or it's bad football or whatnot. But it just means that the tide is turning. It just means that for the third straight year, the SEC is not going to be claiming a national championship and have done so as participants in the process on the losing end. If Alabama wins, all is right in the southeastern part of the United States. The Tide have rectified the problem. The Tide have got the ship back on the right track. So, this game coming up on Monday carries a lot more weight than two teams just vying for a championship. And again, it's pressure that's not going to be prevalent on the field. You know, Clemson, for example, is not under the pressure of, we got to win a national championship because Lord knows we haven't had one here since 1981. They don't, that's not their problem. There may be pressure to win a national championship because we don't know if we're ever going to be here like this again. That might be prevalent. But this kind of stuff does hover. People really want to bury the SEC. You're never going to bury the SEC. I got news for you. You're never going to bury it. There's always going to be a team in that conference that's worthy of national consideration, if not two or three. Is it top to bottom good? No. In fact, an entire division in the Southeastern Conference is bad. Some good teams, but no great teams. And some really god-awful teams. Nope, teams in the West, like Ole Miss, Alabama, teams like that, you know, can play and play well. LSU, the SEC had a very successful bowl record this year. Not only did they have a successful bowl record, they dominated in some of their games, completely dominated in some of the games, some of the better matchups. But this national championship game is where the eyes are. And just that, just as people were happy when Alabama lost last year to Ohio State, they'll be even more happy when Clemson beats them for the national championship. And maybe, and fair or unfair, that's the way it's going to be. I will say, I don't know if Jameis Winston and Florida State got that same kind of support against Auburn. Yes, there was an arrogance in the SEC going in. They had won seven straight. But Jameis Winston was not a likable player. And Florida State is not a likable program nationwide. Florida State has had its own, you know, image issues and how all of that off the field stuff was handled. So I don't think they were the, oh golly, let's root for this to happen. I think people were hoping for the outcome, but I don't think they were all of a sudden Florida State fans. But a lot of people were very, very happy with Ohio State. Because like I said, in that game, Alabama went out to a lead in that game. It was a pretty good lead at the time. And Ohio State could have just ran and hid, but of course, when you're led by Urban Meyer, there's always a chance. And Ezekiel Elliott started breaking free, and before you know it, Alabama was on its heels, and they ended up out of the national championship playoff picture. So I'm going to be interested to see what the narrative is going to be coming up to this game on Monday night involving the SEC. Because listen, people used to kid about Florida State, right? Because Florida State would be really good, and they're not true ACC. They're more, you know, like they're ACC in the way like, you know, if the Seattle Seahawks were to move to the Pac-12, you know, like the Florida State was good, and then there was everybody else in the ACC. So you weren't losing to an ACC school. Technically you were, but you were losing to Florida State. This would be the second ACC national championship in a three-year period. And both of them, if this occurs, both of them will have won their national titles beating SEC teams. That's a big deal to the ACC. They may not want to come. You know what? I scratched that. I wanted to say they may not come out and say it like that. But then I said, you know what? They would say it like that. It's gotten to be that point where conference presidents and conference spokesmen are just like, yeah, no, we beat an SEC school. Yeah, we're bragging about this. So again, Monday night in Glendale. Dabo Swinney. By the way, did you hear his press conference? He is funny. He is funny. Saying, I didn't know my name wasn't Dabo until the third grade. Oh, he's great. He just sucking up that Southern stereotype. I love him. I love him. And he can coach. He can coach. Coming up next, top five, bottom five, the final one of the year. For 17 weeks, we've been telling you who we liked and don't like in the National Football League. We put it all together next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, top five, bottom five in the National Football League after 17 weeks of play and we head to the playoffs. I started thinking we have done this every single week. I think we missed one because of the holiday, right? When we were,
yes.
When I was on
yes,
vacation.
That week you were gone.
So we have gone through this top five, bottom five, and now we're at a point where we're going to close it out for the season. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's start with the bottom five. Number 28 on my list of the worst teams in the National Football League. Number 28, I put the San Francisco 49ers. They went 5-11. Played a little better, looked a little bit better, but for the most part had a lousy year. So I put San Francisco as 28.
I had the San Diego Chargers, and the reason I didn't put them a little lower is because of all the injuries they had. I mean, that offense was just ravaged by injuries all season long, especially the wide receivers. So I put them there just because of the injuries.
I put San Diego at 29, and same thing with the injuries. And it was really prevalent in that game against Denver, how you can, if you have any semblance of an offense, then you take advantage of five turnovers.
Right.
And they couldn't take advantage of any turnovers. They just didn't have a team. So as bad as they've gotten beat up, it was just a bad year. So I put them at 29. Who's your 29?
I put the 49ers, and that's
all right.
Just
so we just interchanged it,
and it's more just because of the complete mess that whole front office is. I mean, the product on the field isn't good, but the complete mess. Now Tom Sula's out. They're talking to, you know, I've seen, like we've talked about the last few nights, we've seen every name wanting to go there for some reason, and again, Trent Baalke gets to hire another coach. So I just they're a mess.
Do you think Colin Kaepernick is attractive to Chip Kelly? That's what I keep thinking. I keep thinking
we kept hearing his name come up with the Eagles, that he was going to go to the Eagles next
year. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that? Right. So I'm wondering if the reason Chip Kelly is intrigued by it is that he has a tendency to sort of gravitate to those kind of players that where, you know, when everybody thinks X, he thinks Y, and he can, you know, whether it's Sam Bradford or whatnot. And I'm wondering if he sees the opportunity with Colin Kaepernick and says, I definitely could turn him back to what he was. It wasn't that long ago where Colin Kaepernick was the man in the National Football League.
I don't know if is Kaepernick worth a $15 million cap hit.
I agree.
It jumps to almost 20 the next 2 years after that.
Yeah, absolutely. I do not either. All right, number 30 on your list.
Let me get back to it. It is the Dallas Cowboys.
That's where I have the Dallas Cowboys, at 30. There are teams that belong in the bottom. The Dallas Cowboys are right above the two worst teams in the league. I mean, it's just been a mess. And you know what? I understand the anger. I said this all year long, that there's no excuse why the Dallas Cowboys could not have won at least one or two of the games during that seven-game losing skid. You want to blame Jason Garrett? Fine. The team was out without Tony Romo? Fine. Absolutely. They should have won a couple of games, but in the end, top to bottom, this is a mess. Fourth pick in the upcoming NFL draft, and I couldn't be happier. This is going
to
be fun.
And let's not, you know, their defense was supposed to be good. It wasn't very good this year. Their offensive line, which was supposed to be historically good,
that wasn't good.
I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great like it was supposed to be. So, I mean, nothing. And Dez Bryant, when he did play, he wasn't very good. I know the quarterback play, but there's plenty of wide receivers in this league that play with crappy. Look at DeAndre Hopkins. He's went through like 37 quarterbacks, and he put up huge numbers.
Yeah, it could have.
So it was a disaster in Dallas.
Disaster.
And I don't really think it can get that much better next year. They'll compete with Romo, but I don't see him as a playoff team at this moment.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I know they want to go quarterback with the fourth pick. I think you can get a quarterback somewhere else. I don't know if you need to get your superstar backup with the fourth pick in the draft.
They'll get Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, they'll get Manziel. All right, 31. And this is, I reversed it the way I put.
I think we did the same thing.
I put the Tennessee Titans at 31.
I did too.
And it's not because the Tennessee Titans don't stink. They absolutely do stink. But I put the Cleveland Browns at 32, and because I feel like the situation in Tennessee is a little bit better, and maybe that's clouding my ranking. Marcus Mariota, he was hurt and out. Cleveland, I mean, it just feels like it's a worse situation and a worse team. So that's why I did it.
I completely thought about where the franchise is at the moment when I was making these, especially the bottom five rankings. I mean, Cleveland is a disaster. Now they bring in a baseball guy. I mean, I don't know what's going on.
I don't either.
I have no idea what's going on with this organization. They don't know what they want.
Tennessee will have the number one pick in the draft, but I have Cleveland as the worst team in the National Football League. I'm with you. All right, top five. Let's start with number five. I put the Denver Broncos there.
I did as well.
I put a little bit of a, but I put the Denver Broncos there. I am really not liking this dual quarterback thing. I just think it's going to backfire. I just don't like it. I don't know how Gary Kubiak works it. I don't know how he gets it to the moment Manning throws a pick, that place is going to lose it, and they're going to want Brock, and they're going to give him a standing ovation until he does something wrong, and then it's just going to go back and forth, and I don't know if Kubiak can withstand it. So I don't know how this is going to work, but they are the number one seed in the AFC, and I can't take it away. So number four on your list.
I put the New England Patriots. I wanted to put them three because I was kind of, you know, they're supposedly going to be healthy for the playoffs, but right now I just have them four.
I have them four as well. That's where I put New England. I like them a little bit more than Denver. I don't know yet how bad they're supposed to be healthy. We'll see. They didn't close out the season as well as they probably should. And I don't like the fact that when you go to Miami and you have number one seed on the line, even if your quarterback's hobbling around a little bit, they just didn't look inspired enough to find a way to win.
I just wish I knew if Andy Dalton was going to play and be healthy.
Yeah, me too.
Because if he's playing and they're healthy, I would put them four, maybe even three.
Cincinnati with Andy Dalton's in my top five.
Yes, for sure.
And but right now with AJ McCarron, they're not.
Me, they would probably be three if they had a healthy Andy Dalton.
And I'm really, really curious of where Andy Dalton's going to be this weekend.
Yes, you especially.
Number three on your list.
The team we talked about earlier, the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, I got the Seahawks there too. So we probably have the same. We'll see how the top two go. My number two team is where I put the Arizona Cardinals.
Yes, I did too. I had it at one point. I had Cardinals one because I do think they're the most complete team in the league. But you got to look at what the Panthers did.
Yeah, that's what I did. I saw the Panthers and I said, look, you're beating up on the Buccaneers. Okay, great. But they rebounded nicely. They did lose. They rebounded nicely. They got everything done. Cam Newton is the MVP. It's been that year for them. We didn't respect them at the beginning, wondering if it was fool's gold. It wasn't fool's gold. The Carolina Panthers were the top teams. Once they got it, it didn't take us long to realize
that they
were for real.
I just really want to see that NFC Championship game with Carolina, Arizona.
I do too.
I don't want to see Seattle in it. I want to see Arizona, Carolina.
All right, coming up next, Manziel era over in Cleveland and a new one begins, but will that work? Next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, so the Johnny Manziel era may actually be coming to an end. It hasn't come to an end, but it looks like it is. Now, I'm going to say this. It's kind of sad to me. I was high on Manziel. I wanted to see him play. I didn't necessarily care if he was successful. I just wanted a bigger body of work. But he brought it on himself. All these reports that are coming in, I don't even know what to believe half the time. Was he drunk? Was he in disguise? Failed to show up for his concussion protocol test? You know what? Eventually, patience just wears thin. No, this is as much on him as it had been to the organization. I've been saying it. I think both sides botched this up completely. It was a marriage that wasn't meant to last, and both people have to go their own separate ways. I think it's good for Manziel to get out of there and try something else. I think it's good for the Browns to get rid of him and the first-round quarterback pressure that they are going to have to feel for paying him the kind of money that they're paying him and then not utilizing him at all. New coach, new GM, I don't care. You have to get to cut the tie. He doesn't respect the organization enough. He's got a problem. The organization needs to just say thanks, but no thanks, goodbye. Now, I don't know if that plays out. Maybe they hire a coach, and that coach is a big Johnny Manziel fan and really wants to see it work out. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But it does look like to me that the era of Johnny Manziel is coming to an end. And what a mess it's been. And Cleveland, for its part, has conducted a perfect case study on what can happen when your organization is as dysfunctional as they are. Was selecting Johnny Manziel, moving up in the draft to select Johnny Manziel, the right pick for Cleveland? Sure. Sure it was. You take a shot. Sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. Okay, we get that. But if you draft a quarterback in the first round, I don't care who he is, and I don't care what your coach thinks, you draft a quarterback in the first round, eventually he has to have the team. Eventually, you have to give him the team.
My favorite thing about the Browns, you look back to 2007, they drafted Brady Quinn. 2012, they drafted Brandon Whedon. In 2014, they drafted Johnny Manziel. They were all drafted 22nd overall.
Ah, good point. Yeah. That's a nice little, you know, Jeopardy trivia question.
Yeah, I think it's time for Cleveland to stay away from that 22nd pick.
Yeah,
especially
exactly.
If it's a quarterback. Like, they're going to trade to 22 and pick Connor Cook this year.
All right, so now you have this. So here you draft this guy, right? People are buying his jerseys. People are going crazy. They're celebrating at the facility. Fine, okay. Mike Pettine, it's not quite his guy. Okay, I can live with that too. Not every coach loves your selection of quarterback. I get it. But my God, have you ever seen an organization treat its first-round quarterback worse than the Browns treated Johnny Manziel almost from the beginning of the relationship? Now, this is not excusing Manziel's actions. He does have a problem with alcohol. He does need to get that worked out. If these stories are true about going to Vegas, he's got a problem. He does need to work this
out. There was another one, a picture today of him at a grocery store buying like four bottles of wine.
Yeah. That's why I heard that too. I don't know how much of this is that a legit picture?
It really looks like him. I mean, it could have been from 3 years ago, but I mean, that's the thing with social media now. You don't know.
You don't know. The story out of Vegas is look.
It's awesome.
Is he wore a blonde wig and was it a VIP and a mustache? What is he, Bobby Valentine?
Like yes, that's what I picture is Bobby Valentine.
Right. Nothing to see here, folks. Gosh. So, you know, I can't help it. I just,
the kid is awesome.
You know what? He's like, listen, if I'm going down, I am going down hard. I am, you know, we're talking blonde wigs and mustaches and blackjack tables and having fun
but
and
like,
not
here's
showing
my
up
thing.
To meetings.
If Rob Gronkowski does this stuff, it's applauded. It's laughed at. It's
celebrated.
It's great. It's hilarious.
Part of the Gronk mystique.
Yeah. But Manziel, because and let's face it, the kid's never gotten a legit shot in the NFL.
Never. Listen, and again, I'm saying this. I understand some people going, oh, why cry me a river, Manziel? No. It's think about it. Try to remember the last number one pick first round pick in the draft at quarter. You need a quarterback. You select a quarterback in the first round. Name me the last team that basically tossed their pick away. And like, without any sort of, like, at least the Raiders gave Jamarcus Russell a chance to start and have it be before they went, oh, this isn't working out. Manziel got there and they went, yeah, no. It's Brian Hoyer's job. Okay, I'll wait. And then Brian Hoyer struggled. Now it's your job. Okay. Well, I overslept. Okay. Then the next year. All right. Is it my job yet? Nah. We're bringing in Josh McCown. Then he disappoints them one more time, and they give it to Austin Davis, of all people. My God. I've been using this analogy all year. It's like the Cleveland Browns are saying to the NFL, you gave us this guy, and we're not going to use him. They weren't assigned Johnny Manziel. They picked Johnny Manziel. And they paid him. They're paying him a lot of money not to do anything. So here are the Browns. They've got they pick a quarterback they're not going to use. They're a mess. So where do they go? Now, so I said one era is coming, could be coming to an end, and another one's beginning. They bring in a baseball guy to now become the new director of strategy.
Yes.
Okay, Paul DePodesta, who is He was of the Mets, but he was Billy Beane's guy in Oakland. Yes. He's the guy that Jonah Hill's character was based on.
Right.
He wasn't called Paul DePodesta in the movie. I think it was called Paul Brand or
something
along those lines. I don't even know if it was Paul. But anyway, he was the inspiration for Jonah Hill's character in Moneyball, if you saw the movie. Young kid, was one time the L.A. Dodgers general manager for a couple of years. Got the job at 31 when he was the Dodgers GM, but it was too big of a job. He didn't take it. He built himself back up in baseball. All right. On the surface, this screams, what the hell are the Browns doing? On the other hand, let me just say this. Is this going to work using the kind of Moneyball mentality? And again, maybe he's not married to that. Maybe he's got his own analytics. But here's why I say this. When you work in baseball, okay, and you're doing the kind of stuff him and Billy Beane were doing, trying to put together a roster, and you say things like, oh, we want a second baseman that draws this many walks or steals this many bases or whatnot. In baseball, you find those players and then you bring them up and then you sign them cheap or based on your budget. Because there's no salary cap, you're able to sort of play around with your finances a little bit more. Getting a player, not getting a player, getting rid of a player, bringing in another guy. You kind of have this big canvas to paint on. With the NFL, because of the salary cap and salary hits, so let's say you're strategically breaking down the Browns roster using that same kind of mentality, and you say, like, well, based on my analytics, if we can get an offensive line that weighs this, that has this kind of speed amongst his linemen, we think that will work better. You can't just dump the entire offensive line of the Browns and then just go hire cheap people. Like, it doesn't work that way. You have to spend a certain amount of money, and then there's a certain amount of money that counts against you. So you can't just go, well, we like running backs that are this size with this kind of 40 time. Let's just dump every running back we have and bring in those guys. You can in baseball if you want.
Well, and also, baseball's basically an individual sport that's played as a team.
Right,
football's
exactly.
Football's a complete, you know, an offensive line is five guys playing as a team. If one's bad, the guy next to him is going to struggle because he has to make up the slack for that guy. That doesn't happen too much in baseball.
And even in baseball, one of the beauties of the Moneyball movie, and again, I know it was Hollywood and they fictionalized a lot of things, was how Billy Beane and this guy would be making these kind of deals in secret. Like nobody really knew why they were doing these things. Like, they would say, oh, we want Joe Smith. And the other guy on the other line was like, why would he want Joe Smith? That doesn't make any sense, but he's giving me this guy for him. And I feel like I'm being hoodwinked, but I'll take the deal. And that was kind of the beauty of what in the NFL, that doesn't work that way at all. Like, at all. You can't, because there's no minor league system. Right? So you're not hoarding players. You're not hoarding 21, 22 year old guys in your farm system that you can later pitch and use as pawns. So again, he's a bright guy. He's a really, really smart guy. And I'm sure he's not going to take exactly the Moneyball system and use it in the NFL. But a lot of the things that made him successful in baseball were built on the environment or the economic structure of baseball that doesn't exist in the NFL. Is he smart enough to adapt? Yeah, he's smart enough to adapt. It just feels weird because if you're Cleveland and you're kind of counting on that, you're now bringing in a guy where you say the things that made you successful, you really can't use any of it. So basically, you doing this job is a crapshoot mystery to us. So I don't know if it's going to work. Now, I hope it works for him because this guy has a heart for Cleveland. He loves the challenge. Everything I read about this was every guy he talked to a lot of GMs in baseball. Everyone that spoke on the record about their conversation with him said he is genuinely excited about this opportunity in front of him. That he's been in baseball. He's been successful in baseball. Here is an opportunity to be part of rebuilding the Cleveland Browns. So this might work. But I just don't see the system working. That's basically what I'm saying.
I saw someone tweet today that the Cleveland Browns are going to hire Tony La Russa.
Yeah, I know. I know. And that's another thing, too. If you're the Browns and your fans are wearing bags on their heads and they're wearing jerseys with 25 different names on them based on the starting quarterbacks, and you haven't had a, you've had one winning record since they revitalized the franchise, and you're going through yet another head coaching search. And oh, by the way, do you remember when Mike Pettine hired, how many people were lining up to take the Browns job? Remember
right.
that?
Yep.
Nobody wanted it. So they're going to go through that again. And right now, everything that you touch is an embarrassment. You have to take the licks that are coming your way from every single person that wants to make a joke. Like, what's next? Hiring Mike Brown to coach wide receivers? What's next? Bringing in Kevin Love to play quarterback?
Yeah, you're just...
What are you going to do next, Cleveland Browns?
Yeah.
How about Michael Phelps to teach the offensive line? I mean, like anybody but football people.
Yes.
Involved. So you take the memes, you take the Twitter hits. You have to, because this hire, it's almost like they realize they're a pro football team, right? I mean, you know,
this is still football. It's still the NFL.
When you hire Paul DePodesta, you got to check sometimes. We do play football, correct? Because this guy is successful in another sport. So good for Cleveland.
One thing real quick on Manziel. You know, you're talking about other quarterbacks that, you know, have been treated like this. I just think about the other two quarterbacks I just talked about, Brandon Whedon and Brady Quinn. Total, those three guys, all first-round picks, started 40 games together. None of them started a complete 2 years. Brandon Whedon started 20. Brady Quinn only got 12 starts with the Browns.
Wow.
And they had a total record of 10-30.
My God. Ugh. My God. That's a great stat. Good numbers there.
So, yeah, three first-round picks. Not one of them started an equivalent of two seasons, which is 32 games.
Zero patience in that building.
No, zero.
Zero patience in that building. It's awful.
I mean, it must come down to the owners. The owners just have to be people that just sit there and they're like 45 minutes in, like their buyer's remorse instantly on everything they do.
Yeah. Unreal. 800-777-2907. So should the Johnny Manziel era be over in Cleveland? And if he's in Dallas, would that make some of you happy? 800-777-2907. I don't know if it would. I don't know if it would, but some people need a fresh start. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. 800-777-2907. It's Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio, taking you through the night tonight, getting ready for the weekend and the NFL playoffs. Also, I'm looking forward to that championship game with Alabama-Clemson. Ah, it's hard. It's hard, though. I can't. If Clemson wins a national championship, I got friends who went to school there, and we have our normal South Carolina-Clemson rivalry. I don't know if I can put up with the trash talking. I don't know if I can make it. Speaking of South Carolina, Michael in South Carolina joins us next on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you?
Well, Tony, I'm going to first address, you know, you're a professed Steelers fan. What would be better for you as a Steelers fan if the Browns throw Manziel overboard so Jarrah can pick him up and take him to Dallas to join that circus down there, man?
That's true.
So chaos, more chaos into more chaos. I mean,
I agree.
Anyway, all right, one tangent. You know, everybody's been screaming about building a wall along the Mexico-United States border.
Uh-oh.
We got our priorities so wrong. We need to focus on building that wall around Pickens County in South Carolina to keep the nuts in, all right?
I'm with you, man.
Roll Tide.
Michael, good night.
Yes, sir.
They are going to be unbearable if they win the national championship game. Actually, both fan bases are going to be unbearable. But Clemson, if Clemson wins the national title, I don't know how. If I lived there, I'd lose my mind. It is that, because it's not like it's really, it's like any other rivalry in sports, but there is, When I went to school in South Carolina, it had been about a decade since Clemson won their first national championship in 1981. They were still bragging about it. Still bragging about it to South Carolina fans.
Will your show be affected one way or the other? Will you be in a better mood if Clemson loses next Monday
night?
Kind of,
yeah. I got to be honest with you.
Or will you be like, oh, I don't even want to do this show if Clemson wins?
Yeah. If on Monday night, if Clemson wins and I got to kind of break all that down, I'll do it because, man, I do it, but that's going to make me sick.
Yeah. I'll just play a lot of like funeral music and just,
oh, I know.
Just sad trombones and
God, Clemson Tigers. And then the Sports Illustrated commercials come, yep, start coming around, inundating my television. Clemson Tigers, you are the national champs. Celebrate the moment with this commemorative issue. Oh, no. I have one buddy. I kid you not. I would not put it past him to send me that issue. Just because he is always... we have these... Here's the problem with... This longtime friend of mine went to Clemson. And... We've been having our wars for years and years and years, but he is a good dude. And he posts Clemson stuff on his Facebook page, and I ignore most of it. And then every now and then I can't help myself, and I go, oh, come on, Everett, you know, blah, 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 blah. And we end up going back and forth for like a day, like a full day going back and forth. But I would not put it past him to go, you know what, Tony, you're getting a Clemson commemorative Sports Illustrated issue. So there, enjoy it. Just because. But can you listen? Alabama, like I was saying earlier, Alabama is going for their 16th national championship in school history. But if you really dig into it, if you really look at the history, some of it's like shady accounting based on what was considered a championship way back in the day and whatnot. But Clemson's going for their first since 1981. And I'll be honest, there was a time where I never thought I'd see the day where Clemson would win a national championship, and now it's here. They're on the verge. Both fan bases, though, are going to be insufferable. Alabama, my man. I mean, man, what kind? You're not supposed to have this kind of success in college football. I mean, we just gave Pete Carroll and the USC Trojans all the credit in the world for almost winning three straight national titles. Before losing to Texas. Nick Saban is about ready to put his fourth one on the board in 6 years. When did they win that first one? The 2009 national title when they beat Texas? Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
They beat Texas in January of 2010. They beat LSU in January of 2012. They beat Notre Dame in January of 2013. They're about ready to put the fourth on the board in a six-year period. That's crazy. You're not supposed to do that. And there's nothing to indicate that they won't do it again the year later or year after that. Something's got to happen. Somebody's got to get some sort of illegal booster money. Calm that ship down for a little
while. Well, that's what happened to USC.
Right? I know. Somebody needs to have an illegal house. By the way, I watched that documentary, the Trojan War. You know, this is one of the reasons I love sports documentaries. As I get older and more stuff gets, useless stuff gets thrown into my brain, a lot of my memories get faded. Watching those highlights, I realized, God, USC was so good.
Yeah.
So you just kind of reminded, like, sit back and go, wow.
30 for 30, 85 Bears is coming up soon.
Oh, that's going to be great. That is going to be great. What a good team that was. You think I'm going to talk about all the endorsements those guys were doing?
Oh, yeah.
Dancing around, Super Bowl shuffle, fridge eating McDonald's, fridge drinking, refrigerators of Coke. Oh, that's going to be good. 30 for 30s are great. All right, coming up next hour, we'll talk a little baseball as well as the NFL playoffs next. Yahoo Sports Radio.